To the Mishnah on Daf Memtes, Amud Aleph, on the bottom of the Amud. Tomnim Bishlochin Umetaltalin Osan. So we're talking about animal hides, and we're talking about a Dover She'eno Mosif Hevel, which means that although if I insulate my pot in these animal hides, it will help retain the fire, the heat level, but it does not add heat. And therefore it's mutter to do this atmana on Erev Shabbos, because it's not a Dovra Mosif Hevel. However, Begizei Tzemer, but V'ein Mitalten Osan. Here the Mishnah differentiates as far as mukta is concerned, between hides and shearings, or shall we call them wool. In the case of hides, I can use them for many different purposes, let's say for a mat on the ground, and therefore it's not mukta. But semer is usually designated for a malacha, meaning I take this natural shearing of wool and I make threads out of it and I make a garment out of it. So that's something that is dedicated for a malach, and therefore it's muktzah. However, as far as hatmana is concerned, hatmana in Gizei Tzemer on Erev Shabbos is mutter. So I can insulate my pot that's hot inside the wool shearings. But now I'm in a very kind of a paradox. Why? Because the Mishnah is establishing that those shearings are muktzah. So the Mishnah therefore asks, Ketzad hu oseh? In other words, on Shabbos he wants to take his pot out of the shearings. I think we discussed this last week, by the way. And what's going to happen is, inevitably, he's going to move the shearings when he lifts up the pot. The shearings cover the pot on all sides, and certainly there are shearings on top of his lid. When he lifts up the pot and he opens the lid, the shearings are going to be moved back in all directions. And the Mishnah allows it. Why? No telas akisu ve no flos. I'll add a word here, me'aleihem, meaning what's going to happen is that he's not directly moving the shearings, he's lifting up the lid, and as a result of lifting up the lid, the shearings move and they slide off by themselves. That's called tiltul minatzad. Let's take the famous case at the Gemara, at the end of Masechta Shabbos, we have a radish, and the radish is submerged in the ground, but part of the radish is above ground, so he pulls it out, and the ground automatically falls into place. This is the shita of the Tanakama. However, now we get to the shita of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and he says that kupa mata al... Oh, I'm sorry. So again, in this case, it seems that even Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is mekel because of tiltul minatzad. But the Sefer of the Mishnah addresses a case where Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is machmir. What's the case? Kupa. So now, what happens is, he places his pot inside a box, and he surrounds the box with this, Gizei Tzemer. So now what happens is, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that we're not going to allow him to pick up the pot like we did in the Reisha, but rather we're going to force him to tilt the entire box over to its side and simply pour out the food while the pot still remains inside the box. So again, if you have no box, you just have a kedera, you have a pot that is surrounded by Gizei Tzemer, then no problem. Just lift off the lid and you're okay. But not so, says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, in a case where your pot is submerged in the gizei tzemer that are in the box, in the kupa. Why? Why is this prohibited? Why does he have to do it in a way that he tilts the box in order to get out the... but he doesn't remove the kedera? Shema yitol v'eino yochel lahachzir. What we're afraid of is that if he takes the pot out of the box, then what's going to happen is that the shearings are now going to fall onto the sides. The Gemara is going to call that a guma. Guma means the lower part of the box, right? He has shearings that cover the pot on the right side, the left side, and the top. But once he removes the pot from the box, then all these shearings are going to fall down to the bottom of the kupa. Now he's got a problem because he wants to replace his pot. Let's say Friday night he takes out of the pot 50% of what's in the pot of the food. He wants the other 50% to remain in the insulation so that tomorrow for lunch on Shabbos day he'll have hot food. And what's going to happen now is that since the shearings fell down to the bottom of the box, which is called the cavity or the guma, he won't be able to insulate his pot again. Why? Because where are the shearings? The shearings are all the way in the bottom of the box. If they're on the bottom of the box, then the only way he could accomplish his goal here is if he digs into the box, takes out the shearings with his the bare hands, and insulates the pot. But that he's not allowed to do because the shearings are mukta. V'chachomim omrim notel umachzer. The chachomim are not afraid of his taking the pot out of the box and putting the pot back in the box for the balance of the contents of the pot to be hot for tomorrow. And apparently the Chachom are not afraid that the person will dig into the bottom of the box to get out, scoop out the shearings in order to accomplish his goal of Hatmana and violate the Isur Mukta. The shearings will somehow just simply float on the top of the box, so to speak. In other words, there's enough here that even after he removes his pot, the shearings are not all the way on the bottom in the cavity. He doesn't have to scoop them up, and just simply when he rests the pot down, when he puts the pot down on top of the shearings will automatically cushion and insulate his pot. They won't fall, you know, deep down into the box. And therefore he won't be tempted to have to, with his own direct hands, to move the shearings and move mukta. And again, it'll be a kind of a tiltul min atzad, where he puts the pot down and the shearings fall into place because they're on the sides, and the box now, you know, compresses the shearing such that they now cover the pot. So basically, just to summarize, the machlokas here between Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and the Chachamim is, do I have to be afraid of the following scenario, that when he pulls his pot out of the box, the shearings fall to the bottom of the box? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is worried about that, and therefore he's going to have to move the shearings in order to re-insulate his pot, the balance of the contents of the pot. Chachamim not worried about that. They think that he's got enough, you know, maybe he'll calculate this before Shabbos, that he'll have enough of shearings in there, such that when he takes the pot out and puts it back in, everything, the insulation will fall into place, the wool will fall into place, he doesn't have to worry about some sort of act of tiltul mukta on the gizei tzemer. So Belineta will get to that sugya in the Gemara itself. Yosef Rabbi Yonasan ben Achinoi, Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar, V'yosef Rabbi Hanina bar Chama Gabayu. Okay, so we have two Amoraim that were together, and a third Amora named Rabbi Hanina was with them, V'kami Boilahu, and he raised the following question to Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yonasan. Shlochin shel balabayis knan, aval shel uman came in the capital I lomat metalthalon, odilma shel uman tanan v'kolshkein shel balabayis. What kind of hides are we dealing with? When the Mishnah says that hatmona in a hide is mutter because it's ain't no mosif hevel, and not only that, you're allowed to move the hides in order to remove your pot, and that's not considered an Iser Mukta. So what kind of hides are we dealing with? There are two types of hides. There are personal hides in a private household for private use, and then there are hides of a professional. He's the tanner, and he takes these hides, he tans them, and he sells them on the market. If he sells them on the market, then he will be very inhibited about using them for his own purposes. We said that the reason why these shlochim are not considered mukta is because he might use them. He needs a mat, and he'll use them for a mat. He needs a placemat, whatever he needs. But in the case of an uman, that's not a case where the Mishnah would allow you to move these hides, because those hides are designated for the marketplace, for sale. Or shall we say, no, the Mishnah is talking about all cases, even the case of a professional uman who's intending to sell these hides on the market, and how much more so in the case of a private householder. So it seems to me that this machloket, this suffix of Rabbi Yonasan, really depends upon the machlokas about mukta. There are two definitions of mukta. One definition of mukta means you have something that's not fit for use, period. And another definition of mukta means something that you haven't designated for use. You need a positive designation. In the case of the craftsman, of the uman, he did not actively designate these hides for use. He's going to sell them on the market. But on the other hand, they have a function. It's not like eitzim v'avanim that have no function. So this is the major machlokes shin Rabbi Yudin and Rabbi Shimon about mukta. Amalu Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar mistavra shel balabayis tanan aval shel uman kapet alayhu. His intuitive logic is that in the case of an uman, he doesn't want to use these hides. He has them designated for sale. Now it's a little bit paradoxical because he's using them for insulation. I'm going to stick my head out here, and I'm going to say that insulation does not in any way damage the hides. If you would use it as a mat and step on it, then I don't know how much money your buyer is going to want to pay for these hides. They're used, damaged goods. But in the case of insulation, perhaps it doesn't in any way detract from the value of the hides. Amalu Rab Chanina bar Chama. However, Rab Chanina bar Chama told these Amoraim, with all due respect, Kach Amar Rab Yishmael bar Rab Yossi. This is what I heard from Rabbi Yishmael. And Rabbi Yishmael is going to tell us about his father, Rab Yossi. That's going to be on Daf Mem Tes Amid Beis. Abba Shloch Ahava. Abba, my father, you know, to make a parnasa, he was a tanner. The Omar, and he used to say on Shabbos, Haviu shlochim v'neshev aleihem. Bring out the hides, and we'll use them to sit on them, even though these hides were designated for sale. So we see, clearly, from the testimony of Rabbi Yishmael about his father Rabbi Yossi, that even hides that are designated for sale can still be used on Shabbos, and they're not muktzah. And the reason for that is because it's a kli, it has a function. It's not like Eitz of Avonu.
But Rashi said at the bottom of Mem Tet Omer Aleph that Lola makes a kaimi.
Right. Now, in the normal situation, you would not sit on the, if you're an Uman, you would not sit on it. But they ran out of chairs. All of a sudden, guests came in, and they're desperate now to find chairs. And Rabbi Shmuel had no problem, or I should say, Rabbi Yossi had no problem in using them for sitting purposes. Even though, for sure, if you would have asked them, you know, what are they designated for, you would have told you up front that they're for sale, they're on the market. This is going to be a sugya later on called Tamar de Iska. They used to have dates that they would package for sale. And they ran out of dates in the middle of the meal on Shabbos. And were they allowed to bring those dates that were already packaged for sale as food on the table? Again, the same idea that on the one hand, if you would ask me going into Shabbos, are they designated for food? No. I'm selling them. That's how I make my parnasa. But now I'm in a situation where I need the dates. All of a sudden I got flooded by guests. Halavai, that should happen this Pesach, right? And I want to use the dates to feed my guests. So that's going to be a major machlokas, whether you're allowed to do that. Meisvei. We have a brisa that says Nisarim shel balabayis metaltelin osan v'shel uman ein metaltelin osan. So we're talking about a carpenter, and a carpenter takes wood and he makes them into boards and he sells them. And the question is, if let's say he wants to use it for as a table on Shabbos, so all of a sudden he got guests, would he be allowed to do so? And this brisa says the following, that if it's a balabayis, he's not interested in selling these boards on the market, then he's allowed to be metaltel them. However, if he's an uman and he sells these boards to his clients, then ain't metaltel no son. They have the status of mukta, unless he already anticipated that these guests were coming on Erev Shabbos. And this is going to be a major machlokes amongst the Tanoim, which we'll get to in Mitzvah Shem today. But this particular brisa reflects the shita that all you need is machshava. Im chishev lasei salem pasli orchim. Already on Erev Shabbos he anticipated that guests would come and that he would need these boards to serve as a table. Is then Benkach Ubenkach Metaltelin, even in the case of an Uman, he's allowed to use these boards on Shabbos. There's no Isur Mukta, but that's only because of Chishev Aleihem. Had it not been Chishev Aleihem, then in the case of the Uman, it would be Asur. And the reason for that is because he designates this for sale. So let's apply the same logic to the hides. And I don't understand the custom of Rabbi Yossi that he would allow using these hides, even though he was a professional, you know, hide salesman, on Shabbos for a mat. So the Gemara says there's a difference between hides and boards. Shani nisarim de kapit alayhu. If you use a board as a table, then you might, you might get it chametzdik. I'm just joking, but what I meant to say is that, things spill and. It might have a serious detrimental effect on the quality of the board. So you have to take it out of the status of mukta by at least mentally designating it as a table on Erev Shabbos. Masha'enken, in the case of hides, that if you use hides, I guess you could use it a little bit more carefully, more in a more adin kind of a way, and the hides won't get ruined. I guess the hides are less sensitive. They are more solid, and there's less of a kapeda for the hides. Tashma. So let's go back to the case of the hides. And we're going to learn a braisa. Oros, we're talking about hides. Bein avudim ubein she'enon avudim. Right, a natural hide has to be tanned. So whether or not they were tanned, mutal taltalon b'shabbos. Again, we don't know if we're talking about an uman or a balabais, but the braisa doesn't qualify, and usually we have a rule that anything that's unqualified is unqualified. And then it says, lo amru avudim el inyan tuma bilvat. In other words, when does the status of a hide change in halacha? After it is tanned. And the braisa is asking a rhetorical question, which is sort of implicit here. It's not explicit. The braisa is actually answering this question. Is under what circumstances does halacha differentiate between a natural hide and a hide that's been tanned? And the nafkamina is not as far as tiltal on Shabbos. There, even though it's tanned, you're allowed to move it. But as far as Kabbalah's tum is concerned. We have halacha that a kli is mekabel tuma, and in a natural hide it's not really used on the normal case circumstance. Again, if you're really desperate, you'll use a natural hide without tanning it, but that's very clumsy, and therefore it's not considered a kli. It's not mekabel tuma. At what point do you make that transition? It becomes a kli after he tans it. So now let's go back to the reisha of this braisa. And the braisa says that even if it's tanned, you're allowed to move it. My love, shouldn't we understand? Loshna shel balabais, loshna shel uman. The braisa apparently didn't qualify this. So it seems that even in the case of a craftsman whose intention is to sell these tanned hides, nevertheless he's allowed to use it. He's allowed to be metaltal it. So Gemara says, lo shel balabais. Oh, now we're going to have what's called liflog velisni vidida. You remember that? That's what they taught me when I was in fourth grade. And we learned Elim Etzias. Liflog velisni vidida. So the Gemara asks the following question. Aval shel uman mai. Ein metaltalin. Now you want to defend that shita that differentiates between shel uman and shel balabais, and say that in the case of balabais, since he intends to sell it, he has no intent to use it, and therefore it's mukta ihachi adetani seifa. One second. Hadetani velo amaru and avudim elinyan tuma bilvad, as if to say there's no difference between tanned or untanned skins, except for tuma liflag velisni b'dida. Why don't you tell me that there's a major difference in Hilchus Mukta? You opened up with the braisa with Hilchus Mukta. Why do you have to stretch your arm out to Tumah to differentiate between tanned and untanned? But medvar mamurim b'shel balabais avol b'shel uman lo. You could have easily have differentiated between tanned and untanned hides, even as far as Tiltal Mukta is concerned. And that would be vis-a-vis an uman who sells his tans commercially. And here we're going to say, well, did he tan them yet? If they're not tanned, they're natural hides, then there's no muksa, there's no inhibition to use this hide as a mat or to sit on or whatever you might use it for. But once he tans it, and he's what? He's an uman. At that point, we have an Isur Mukta. Why didn't the braisa point this out instead? The braisa says, if it's tanned, then it's Mekabel Tumah because it has the status of a Kli. Why not stick to your guns? stick to your original topic or subject, and that was muktzah, and tell me that if it's an uman and he tanned the hides, then it's awesome to be metaltal them. So the Gemara answers, no, you know, I'm not so impressed by the liflog v'lisnei b'dida. Why? Because kula b'balabayis kamayri. The Braisa didn't have in mind the case of an uman. It wasn't discussing an uman. You know, we have an intellectual tendency to, you know, we got used to making this differential, this distinction between an uman and a baal bayis, but the Braisa wasn't even aware of that. The Braisa wasn't even thinking in those terms. The Braisa was addressing your normal rank and file citizen. He's a householder, and he's not a craftsman. He's not a professional. He's not a salesman. And therefore, the Braisa held that as far as the Baal Bais is concerned, what difference it makes in Hilchus Mukta between tanned and untanned hides? Even a tanned hide could be used for whatever you want to use it for. You're not designating it for sale. You're not making a profit on it. Wherein is there a distinction between tanned and untanned hides? That's only with regard to Tumah Vitara. Now, the final issue about the status of tanned hides for an uman is Kitanoi, is actually a machlokes, explicit machlokes, tanoim in a braisa. What does it say in the braisa? It says, Oros shel baal habayis metalton osan. The Tanakama says that only in the case of a baal habayis do we allow tiltul, but shel uman ein metalton in osan, because the uman is makpid, he wants to sell it, and that makes it mukta, Rabbi Yossi Omer, echad ze v'echad ze, metalton in osan. You're certainly allowed to be metaltel, even if you're an uman. And in fact, Rabbi Yossi, I'm assuming now that this is the same Rabbi Yossi that we had earlier, the father Rabbi Shmuel, and he said that we would bring out the hides, and we'll sit on them on Shabbos, even though he was a professional. And he would no doubt want to designate those hides for sale, but it's not called mukta because it's functional. Anything that's functional, according to Rabbi Yossi, is not mukta, even if he had designated for another purpose. Tanakama, on the other hand, maintains that if he designated it for a certain purpose, then it's mukta, even though it's usable. You know, it's suitable for many, many different purposes, but you designate it for one specific purpose, to the exclusion of other usages, it becomes mukta. Unless on Erev Shabbos you thought about it, and you decided that you might want to use it on Shabbos, you don't have to make a definite decision, but you already have to have on Erev Shabbos, because the source for mukta, the Gemara at the beginning of Beitza, derives mukta from the pasuk v'ichinu es asher yaviu, that we want you to prepare everything for Shabbos. If you think about it on Erev Shabbos that you might want to use it, that's already considered a hachana. But if you didn't think about it and you're a professional, then it's mukta. Hadur yasve v'kami boyle. The same group of two Rav Yonah's sons and Rav Chanina ben Chama were now discussing a different topic. They finished their first topic, and now they have a different topic. Now, this Gemara that we're about to learn is a very, 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 very famous Gemara in Masechta Shabbos. Because imagine, we've gone through almost 50 blot of Gemara Masechta Shabbos, and we never raised what could be easily considered the most fundamental question in Shabbos. Not how many malachas there are, that's a question which the Mishnah is going to address later on, 39, but how do you derive these 39 malachas? What's the source for these 39 malachas? Every child in Cheder knows the answer to this question. That's because we know this Gemara right here in Perek Bamet Tomnu. Hoder Yasvi Bekomi Boiluhu. Hodis Nana Vos Molochas Arboim Chosarachas Kineged Me. Where is this number 40? Where is this number 39 coming from? Omar Lahu, this is the first opinion. And you and I know this opinion. We don't know that this is a second opinion. Omar Lahu, Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama, Keneged Avodas, Vodos HaMishkan. There were 39 different melachos that were used, that were necessary for the construction of the Mishkan. Now, what about melachos that weren't part of the construction of the Mishkan? For example, Afia. Now, Afia is not really a great example. I'll tell you why. Because Afia is really one malach with Bishul, and the Bishul was done in the Samimonim, and that's how they got the dye into the water by cooking the dyes, the natural herbs. So that kind of Bishul was, in fact, for the purpose of building the Mishkan, because those dyes were used to color the various michsim, you know, those covers over the Mishkan, etc., etc. However, there is one shita which is quoted by the Igle Tal. You know, the Igle Tal is the Sukkot Shavar, the author of the Avodah Zarah. He wrote a book on Melech HaShabbos. If I'm not mistaken, he did not complete his work. He only got to 9 melachas. And he has a discussion about Afia, and he raises the possibility that Afia is derived from the Karbon Minachos, some of the Karbonos of Mincha require Afia. And you also have Lachmei Toda, which also require Afia. Now this is fascinating, as the Igle Tal points out in his introduction to Masechta Shabbos. These are malachas that are not used, to quote our Gemara, as avodas hamishkan, in the sense of building the Mishkan, but rather this is a broader definition of avodas hamishkan, which means simply for the sake of any of the avodah. Right, because now we're talking about the karbanos, and in preparation of the karbanos, we did certain malachos that had to be done, and they too, even though they have nothing to do with the building of the Mishkan, nevertheless, it's considered avodas hamishkan. And if you're interested in philosophy, which is not that's not our main subject for today, this really touches on Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. Because, you know, he, like the Rambam before him, tried to explain philosophically all the mitzvahs. And he speaks a lot about Shabbos. And he comes to the conclusion that the Mishkan is like it's a kind of a microcosm of the universe. And God created the Mishkan with 39. We had to use 39 malachas to create the Mishkan. And God created the universe with 39 malachas. So the creation of the Mishkan as the microcosm of the universe is really the key of keys to understand the source of the 39 malachas. I mean, according to the Igle Tal, if we're expanding it even to the Avodah, like for example the Afia that was done for the sake of Lachmei Todah, I mean, then you're not talking about the creation of the Mishkan, you're not talking about the creation of the universe. So this might have philosophical implications for those who are interested in Jewish philosophy. Anyway, Amalu Rabbi Yonah's son, Rebbe Lazar. And now we have another Shita. And you remember that Rabbi Chanina was sitting together with two other very fine gentlemen, both by the name Rabbi Yonah's son. And one of them, he seems to be the one that took a more active role, because I'm pretty sure he was the same Rabbi Yonah's son who had something to say about the hides of an Uman. Just one second, am I right? I'm just curious. I can't turn these pages here. They get stuck to each other. Just give me a second if I could just turn to the previous page. Ah, yeah, it was also the same Rabbi Yonasan Ben Elazar. So I don't know about the other Rabbi Yonasan, right? He was also there. What was his name? Rabbi Yonah's son, Ben?
Chinoy.
Ben Chinoy? Yes, I don't know. He was a more... He was a Achinoi. Yeah, he was a more quiet chavrusa. Now, there are always two types of chavrusas. You know, there's always one who's more outspoken than the other. In any event, so he chimes in with a whole new source for the number 39 malachas. So if you were teaching this to high school students, you would test them in a quiz. You know, what is the source for the number 39? And if they gave you one answer, which is the Mishkan, that would be fine if you're all like Rav Chanina, but it's not the only answer to this question. We have an alternative answer. And Rav Yonasan ben Elazar quotes Rav Shimon Rav Yossi ben Loknaya. Okay, and what did he say? He said that if you do a word search through the Torah for the word malacha, guess how many times it appears in the Torah? You guessed it, 39. So I actually did a word search and I found it many, many more times than 39. Because now we have, you know, computers to do this work. But we'll try to figure that out as we go along. Anyway, he says, Kenegin malacha, malachto, maleches. There are three types of conjugations of the word malacha in the Torah. And all in all, they equal 39. Arboim choser achas. Okay. Fine. Now,
boy, isn't two different questions. The first Dea says, what is a malacha? And the second one answers how many malachot there are.
So I don't know. You see, it says him, he connected me. And I have a feeling that connected me is not the way we would like to interpret it. Meaning, what are these malachas? Where do you derive them? What makes a malacha essentially a malacha? But rather, connected me, that the number 39 is not just coincidental. And the first answer to the Gemara is that, you know, malacha is essentially a creative act that was used and necessary for the construction of the Mishkan, and we need actually 39 different activities to create the Mishkan, hence the number 39. And now we're quoting Rabbi Shimon, who says no, the number 39 has a different source entirely, has nothing to do with the Mishkan. In any event, a lot of the Rishonim are going to claim, this is the big Ramban, that Rabbi Yonah's son, quoting here Rabbi Shimon, is not denying that there are 39 malachas that were created in the Mishkan. He's just offering an additional source for the number 39. But he's not coming to argue against Rabbi Chanina about the corresponding labors, the categories of labor that created the Mishkan. Boy Rav Yosef. Now, this boy Rav Yosef takes this so seriously that he has a question about a certain pasuk that uses the word malacha, and he has another pasuk that uses the word malacha, and he feels that both of these psukim are number 39, meaning one of the two has to be number 39. They can't both be 39. It's kind of like, say, you know, counting the Tariq mitzvahs. You know, if you include mitzvah X, then you might go over the number 613. You got to drop mitzvah Y and vice versa. And he asks the following question. When Yosef comes back to the house of Eshes Potiphar, the Torah says, Vayovo abaiso lasos melachto. And we don't know what the word melachto means over here. If melachto means work in the literal sense, then this should be counted in the number 39. If, on the other hand, the word malachto here means something totally different, as we'll see in a minute, that's not what the intention of the pasuk was, is miminyanu olo, should we count it as the 39? Well, if the malacha is in some sense a malacha, and that's what Yosef was about to do, his malacha, he was a hired worker in the house of Potiphar, then we can count it as one of the 39. But if, on the other hand, malachto has a totally different meaning, as we'll soon see, then we don't have an ability to count this word malacha. It's a borrowed term, and it doesn't mean what we think it means. It's not a category of labor. So Amalei Abaye, Abaye says to Rav Yosef, Leise Sefer Torah Velimne. What I think we ought to do is we should open up a Sefer Torah and we should count it. And let's see if, you know, apparently Rav Yosef was working with an assumption that there's another pasuk that has the word malacha that could be used as a substitute for this word malacha. But if on the other hand this word malacha is appropriately a category of labor, then the other pasuk has to be reinterpreted. But right now Abaye doesn't know this. Abaye thinks that we have to figure out if there are 38 psukim that have the word malacha in it, then this pasuk by Yosef is going to be number 39. And there was another instance, which the Gemara doesn't tell us exactly what it was, in which they actually said the same thing, and not about the word malacha, but Milo Amar Rabba Barbrachanam Rabbi Yochanan, in some sort of question, and they were talking about how many times a certain word appears, and Rabba said to Rabbi Yochanan, let's bring out a Sefer Torah. So there is a precedent to take out a Sefer Torah and let's sit down painstakingly and go through and count it word for word. They didn't have, you know, a Bar Ilan search engine. Amalei, Rav Yosef says, you don't understand. I know exactly the number in the Torah. But Kikom is Safkalei, Mishum, Dichsiv Amalacha Hoysa Dayam. I have another pasuk in which Moshe Rabbeinu declares that they brought enough work, enough different items that were dedicated, that were donated for the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, and it's enough. So I have now another pasuk, and I'm not exactly sure, you know, which is the number 39. Is it the pasuk by Yosef or this pasuk by the malacha of the Mishkan? Because again, here the word malacha means not that they were doing work really, but they were bringing these various artifacts and objects and threads and all sorts of materials that they donated, and jewelry that they donated for the building of the Mishkan. And the word malach is sort of like a generic term for all these types of objects that were created, all these artifacts. Mimin Yanahu. If I'm going to take the word malach in the context of Yosef and include it in the minyan, then I don't include this pasuk on Malach HaYisadayim. If on the other hand I insist that Malach HaYisadayim is part of the minyan, then I will drop the pasuk by Yosef. So the Gemara says, V'ha'kiman di'omar lasos tzroch of nichnas. If I use this pasuk on Malach HaYisadayim and I include it in the number 39, then I have a different interpretation of the pasuk by Yosef, and it has nothing to do with labor. It wasn't that he was doing his work, but lasos tzrochav, it meant that he would actually go through with this. You know, Eishes Potiphar was tempting him to have a relationship. He would actually he would capitulate. He couldn't take it anymore. You know, as if to say that Yosef was about and then of course the last minute he saw a vision, whatever it is, he desisted. But he was coming back to do his, so to speak, malacha, in inverted commas. O Dilma, Vayavo, Habaiso, Lasos, Malacha, Milato, Miminyanu. Maybe malacha really means that he wanted to do his actual work, his household chores that he was responsible for. He wasn't interested in culminating some relationship with this woman. She's a married woman. Now, if that be the case, then we have to, in the second side of the old Dilma, then we have to drop the ball on Vamalacha Yisadayim, because we don't want to have 40 Malachas. Avahai, in that Pasuk, Vamalacha Yisadayim, Hachikomar, Dishalim Le Avidita. In other words, the malacha that that's referring to is not the malacha that was used to create these various artifacts or utensils and so forth and so on, but rather it's referring to the malacha of gathering together all that we need for the construction of the Mishkan. And that was a task, not a malacha, but it was a task that was completed when they finally brought they contributed those last gifts. Teku, and the Gemara leaves it unresolved. I'm amazed that the Gemara takes this whole business so seriously that Teku, you know, we really don't know the answer to this question. We have two psukim, and each one could go either way. You're going to have to choose one of the two at the end as to whether malacha means a chore or a piece of work. But you see clearly that the Gemara took this very, very seriously. Okay. Tanya keman diomar keneged avodas ha-mishkan. Now again, the language of the Gemara here seems to indicate that there really is a machlokes. But again, the Rishonim are going to claim that the Gemara's language here is just to prove that no one would deny that the number 39 is significant because of Melechas HaMishkan. The Sanya we learned in a Braisa, Ein Chayovin Elo Al Melocha Shekayotzi Ba Hoysa B'Mishkan. And certainly this Braisa is going to derive the malachos from the Mishkan. For example, the Braisa goes into very very specific details. Heim Zaru, they had to plant in order to get those samimonim that were necessary for the dyes, V'atem lo tizru. Heim Katsru, they had to cut down the samimonim that were growing, and also for the Eitzim, for the purpose of the Krashim, is Atem Lo Tiktzeru. Therefore we derive that you're not allowed to cut down and harvest things that are growing in the ground. Heim Helu. Okay, one second. Now it gets a little bit more complicated. Just give me a second here. Okay. Now we're talking about, in this Braisa, Meleches Hotzah. So let's keep in mind that Hotzah has really three major parts to it. I'm leaving out what's called Mavir. That's Dalet Amos Bishus Harab. Let's leave that out. What we're talking about now is Havaras Rishuyos. And there are three major categories. One is called Hotzah, the other is called Hachnasa, and the third is called Hoshata. Hotzah is derived from, just one second. Okay, you know what? For some reason, I'm not sure why, the Braisa starts with Hachnasa. Okay. Heim Helu Es Hakroshim Mikarka La'Gola. When they passed forward the Krashim for the Mishkan, they picked it up in the Machne Levia, which was Rishus HaRabim, and they put it into the Agola. They put it into the wagon. The wagon had what we call 10 tfachim of height and dalid tfachim of width. That makes it into a Rishus HaYochid. So they took the Krashim from Rishus HaRabim into a Rishus HaYochid. That's called Hachnasa. Vatem lo tachnisu Rishus HaRabim Rishus HaYochid. When they finally got to the place where they need to pull the Mishkan, they took the Krashim out of the Agola, that's out of Rishus HaYochid, and they lowered it down into Rishus HaRabim. Atem lo totziu Rishus HaYochid Rishus HaRabim. That's called Hotzah. And now we're up to Hoshata Heim Otziu Mi'Agola La'Agola. Let's say there was somebody in a wagon a little bit further on. So the one behind would be Moshit. He would simply stretch out his arm in order to pass the Keresh from one Agola to another Agola. So that's Atem lo totsim shesayol shesayachid. That's going from one shesayachid to another shesayachid. So the Gemara says, what's going on over here? Shesayachid shesayachid, my covet. This is not a malacha. You take it from one private domain to another private domain. Abay v'rova, the amin shavayu, v'itema ravad v'rava. This is called Meleches Moshit. Moshit means that you stretch your arm out with an object, you're standing in a Rishus HaYochid, you give it over to someone who's also in a Rishus HaYochid, but it goes over the airspace of a Rishus HaRabim. In the Gemara later on, in Perek HaZorik, that's called Diyuta Achas. Like they did have two verandas. And these verandas were Rishus HaYochid, but down below was Rishus HaRabim. They would pass something from one veranda to the other veranda. Okay, Rabosai, this is where we're going to call it. We're going to stop. I'm going to try to find time, if it works out for me, to go a little bit further on my own, and perhaps to upload these shirim